We have Trump on the left. We're going to have Congress on the right. So we will keep listening to Trump. But when it starts in Congress, we're gonna probably switch to a side by side with them, because Trump needs to end his speech soon anyway to make sure that people can start marching towards Congress, because they can't be late. This is going to go very, very quickly. We're going to find out in very short number of minutes whether this is going to go well or go poorly in the joint session of Congress. So that's why we've gone split screen. Ms. Brewster, go ahead, turn up Trump. Let's listen to another couple minutes, and then we'll switch back over to Congress.
Had an astronomical and astounding 93.67% error rate. It's only wrong 93% of the time. In the scanning of ballots requiring a review panel to adjudicate or determine the voter's interest, in over 106,000 ballots out of a total of 113,000. Think of it. You go in and you vote, and then they tell people who you're supposed to be voting for. They make up whatever they want. Nobody's ever even heard. They adjudicate your vote. They say, well, we don't think Trump wants to vote for Trump. We think he wants to vote for Biden. Put it down for Biden. The national average for such an error rate is far less than 1%, and yet you're at 93%. The source of this astronomical error rate must be identified to determine if these machines were set up or destroyed to allow for a third party to disregard the actual ballot cast by the registered voter. The letter continues, there is clear evidence that tens of thousands of votes were switched from President Trump to former Vice President Biden in several counties in Georgia. For example, in Bibb County, President Trump was reported to have 29,391 votes at 9:11 p.m. Eastern Time, while simultaneously Vice President Joe Biden was reported to have 17,213. Minutes later, just minutes, at the next update, these vote numbers switched, with President Trump going way down to 17,000 and Biden going way up to 29,391. And that was very quick, a 12,000 vote switch, all in Mr. Biden's favor. So, I mean, I could go on and on about this fraud that took place in every state. And all of these legislatures want this back. I don't want to do it to you because I love you and it's freezing.
Okay, so we got a lot of stuff going on in Congress. So we're going to make the switch over.
I can tell you this.
We're going to make the switch over, not to silence the president. Only this is what we're waiting for. This is Mike Pence coming into the Congressional Hall, the joint session of Congress. All eyes are on him now. Will he do the right thing? Will he challenge the legitimacy of the Electoral College votes presented to him? Will he present the alternate slates that Donald Trump's electors had signed in these states? Will he count them? Will he send it back to the states? Or will he fold like a cheap suit and decide to just certify Biden as the winner anyway? So, Mr. Brewster, why don't we turn up the volume there on C-SPAN? And that way we can pay attention to what's going on. And big day. Mike Pence is there. He's now, as the Constitution states, he is the president of the Senate. He has to be the one to count the votes. As we've covered on the podcast before, Title 3, Section 15 of the United States Code outlines how those votes are to be counted, how the objections are supposed to be filed. Really bad news today. We've heard that Republicans might even be abandoning challenging Wisconsin. The reason being that Wisconsin comes at the end of the alphabetical order of the counting of the states. So their logic is once Vermont comes in, if the other objections fail, Biden at that point would have 271 electoral votes. And they're saying there's no reason to even challenge Wisconsin. So they're willing, the GOP is willing to let Wisconsin stand without any objection, without any chance to add the evidence of fraud to the record. They're actually talking about letting Wisconsin's fraud stand. As of this morning, it might have changed. There was no senator signed on to Michigan, and there was no senator signed on to Nevada. The only three, that, as of this morning, maybe it's changed. It might have changed. As of this morning, the three states that had senators signed on to objections were allegedly Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. We know that Josh Hawley plans to be the senator to sign on to Pennsylvania. We know that Ted Cruz plans to be the one to sign on to Arizona. I do not know at this hour which Republican senator will be the one to sign on for Georgia. It's a little weird. Technically, Kelly Loeffler is still in Congress. It's strange, right? So Perdue is out. He was naturally, his term was up. Kelly Loeffler has technically been appointed, so she serves in Congress until her replacement is basically certified. So even though it looks like she's going to lose that race, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, the Georgia race, the fraud that we've seen in Georgia, technically she's still there. So it's like a weird thing. She's losing her race, but until they actually call it, count all the ballots and certify it, she's technically still in Congress, and she's promised to challenge Georgia. So she might be the one who challenges Georgia. We'll have to wait and see. You can see there on the right, we're not going to be able to, the way we have it set up, we're not going to be able to show you the periphery margins on the left and right of the screen. But most of the stuff's going to be happening in the middle of the screen anyway. Members of Congress, House of Representatives, and the Senate are meeting for this joint session to certify the Electoral College results. And usually this is just a rubber stamp. This is just a technicality to certify the Electoral College. But this year you actually have, we heard it was going to be over 140. Now we're hearing it might just be over 100. And upwards of 12 senators. But again, the senators aren't actually going to challenge all the states unless our Fax Blast campaign worked this morning. We'll have to see. So it looks like they're gaveling in. Let's go ahead and turn up the volume, Mr. Producer, so we can listen into this.
Historic meeting. Let us remind that each side, House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans, each have 11 members allowed to be present on the floor. Others may be in the gallery. This is at the guidance of the attending physician and the sergeants at arms.
11?
The gentlemen
11?
On the Republican side of the aisle will please observe the social distancing and agree to what we have 11 members on each side.
They're only letting 11 in.
Responsibilities to this chamber, to this responsibility, and to this House of Representatives.
So
please exit.
Ms. Spusa, turn down that volume a little bit. So they're only going to allow 11 from each side on the floor. The rest have to go up into the gallery, but it's the same room. And I mean, theoretically, everyone standing up in the gallery, if they were to cough, they're going to be coughing from a pretty significant distance up, and those particles are going to travel farther. So putting everyone upstairs looking over, it makes no sense. But this is kind of the thing that we've been talking about, how Pelosi could change the rules to only allow so many people on the floor to make it harder for an objection to be filed. Let's go back and listen in. Ms. Spusa, turn up the volume. There we go. Mike Pence is just getting ready to gavel it into session.
Madam Speaker, members of Congress, pursuant to the Constitution and the laws of the United States, the Senate and House of Representatives are meeting in joint session to verify the certificates and count the votes of the electors of the several states for President and Vice President of the United States. After ascertainment has been had that the certificates are authentic and correct in form, the tellers will count and make a list of the votes cast by the electors of the several states. The tellers on the part of the two houses have taken their places at the clerk's desk. Without objection, the tellers will dispense with the reading of the formal portions of the certificates. After ascertaining that the certificates are regular in form and authentic, the tellers will announce the votes cast by the electors for each state, beginning with Alabama, which the parliamentarians advise me is the only certificate of vote from that state and purports to be a return from the state, and that has annexed to it a certificate from an authority of that state purporting to appoint or ascertain electors.
Mr. Blunt.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Virginia rise?
Point of order, parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Vice President. In order to follow with the speaker's instructions that only a limited number of people be on the floor, may I ask how one would make an objection or make a parliamentary inquiry in the future if you're not on the floor but in the gallery?
It's an important question. It's an interesting question. How can you object if you're not in the room?
Under Section 18 of Title 3 of the United States Code, debate is not permitted in the joint session. Gentleman's recognized.
I'm not attempting to debate. I'm trying to find out how a parliamentary inquiry or a parliamentary point of order would be made in following with the speaker's request that most of us not be on the floor. How do you make one of those points of order when you don't know what's going to happen later?
Respectfully, the gentleman's parliamentary inquiry constitutes debate, which is not permitted in the joint session under Section 18 of Title III.
So this is the problem.
United States Code.
Mike Pence hasn't sat in so many of these, so he's just having the parliamentarian read him what he should say. You notice, you won't see it now, but in the full screen, it'll show Pence being told what to say by the parliamentarian. And that's usually the case no matter who is presiding. They tend to not know all of the rules in any given situation. But in this, it's interesting that Pence's words, it sounded like he meant to say that, but the words aren't actually his own. He's having someone whisper in his ear what he should say to the objections. But it's a legitimate question all around. How do you challenge something if you're not allowed in the room? How do you object? How do you have a parliamentary inquiry if you're not allowed in the room? It violates Robert's rules of order. It violates the rules of the House and the Senate. And it's pretty obvious at that point. So, but I mean, the parliamentarian whispered in Pence's ear that constitutes debate, and he shut it down. This is not good at this point. If Pence is just gonna listen to whatever the parliamentarian tells him to do, this is not gonna go well for Trump. This is not gonna go well for us. At some point, Pence is going to have to say something that the parliamentarian doesn't want him to say. And if he doesn't do that, if he doesn't step up and do that, if he's just literally just, you'll see him right now on the screen. He's reading the pieces of paper that they're giving him, explaining what he has to do in this capacity.
Mr. President,
order in the chamber.
Mr. President, the
gentleman will continue.
The certificate of the electoral vote of the state of Alabama seems to be regular in form and authentic. And it appears therefrom that Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida received 9 votes for president and Michael R. Pence of the state of Indiana received 9 votes for vice president.
Are there any objections to counting the certificate of vote of the state of Alabama that the teller has verified appears to be regular in form and authentic? Hearing none. This certificate from Alaska, the parliamentarians advised me, is the only certificate of vote from that state that purports to be a return from the state, and that has annexed to it a certificate from an authority of the state purporting to appoint and ascertain electors.
So let's go ahead and turn the volume down for a little bit, Mr. Producer. So there's not going to be any challenging to Alaska. Alaska is, it's interesting what he's saying. So Pence isn't taking it upon himself to determine whether it is a legitimate ballot, whether it purports to be a ballot or a count. He's leaving that up to other people. Again, this is a bad sign for things to come, because in order for this to go well, one of the ways would have to be Pence taking it upon himself to make sure that fraudulent counts are not added to the final tally. If he's just going to listen to what the parliamentarian tells him and what the other officials in the House tell him, this isn't going to go well. We can go ahead and turn it back up.
Hearing none, this certificate from Arizona, the parliamentarians advised me, is the only certificate of vote that the state purports to be a return from the state, and that has annexed to it a certificate from an authority of that state purporting
to appoint
or ascertain
electors. That's crap, so they're not going to count
the Trump
ballots. Wow. All they had to do was get a piece of paper into his hands from the Trump electors.
The certificate of the electoral vote of the state of Arizona seems to be regular in form and authentic, and it appears therefrom that Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware received 11 votes for president, and Kamala D. Harris of the state of California received 11 votes for vice president.
Are there any objections to counting the certificate of vote of the state of Arizona that the teller has verified appears to be regular in form and authentic?
President, I, Paul Gosar from Arizona.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona rise?
I rise up for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a senator?
Yes, sir. Yes, it is.
It is.
Ted Cruz did it. So he's objecting to it. So we're not going to get Pence to do the right thing. Some applause in the gallery. On the hall. They're not listening to the 11-person rule. They're saying, screw it.
An objection presented in writing and signed by both a representative and a senator complies with the law, Chapter 1 of Title 3 of the United States Code. The clerk will report the objection.
So now they're going to read the objection out so it can be heard. And then they'll have to go to the House and the Senate side and debate it and
objection vote. To counting the electoral votes of the state of Arizona. We, a member of the House of Representatives and a United States Senator, object to the counting of the electoral votes of the state of Arizona on the ground they were not, under all of the known circumstances, regularly given.
Are there further objections to the certificates from the state of Arizona? The chair hears none.
They should have filed more.
The two houses will withdraw from joint session. Each house will deliberate separately on the pending objection and report its decision back to the joint session. The Senate will now retire to its chamber.
So, let's go ahead and turn down the volume. We're going to have to find a way to get both the House and the Senate up here. You'd think that C-SPAN would cover it. We might have to go double C-SPAN, Ms. Producer. I imagine that C-SPAN 2 will be the one that covers the Senate. C-SPAN 1 will probably stay on the House side. That's what you were just watching. So we know that Pence isn't going to do the right thing, that Pence is not going to stand up there and say that I refuse to accept these, putting it back to the states. Obviously, he's not going to do that. He's chosen his lot. He's not going to do it. So we can just right here and right now stop resting our hopes on Mike Pence doing the right thing. As Trump just said, he's going to stab us all in the back. He's just not going to do it. He's going to do what the parliamentarian tells him to do, and that's going to be it. So, unfortunately, what that now means is it's going to rest in the hands of the United States House and the United States Senate, which is unfortunate because that means in order to pass it in the House, you would need six. Even if you got every Republican, which you will not, you would need six Democrats to do it. And on the Senate side, you would need every Republican and a couple of Democrats as well, which, again, that is hard to do. But at this point, what we need to make sure happens is that every bit of evidence gets added into the record. I don't want to hear any grandstanding. Which I know members of Congress will probably take the opportunity to do, to grandstand, to give speeches. We need the next 2 hours to be putting on as much evidence as possible. And frankly, the House and the Senate should present different evidence and not overlap. So that's what's going to happen. They're gaveling out of this joint session right now. And the House and the Senate, Ms. Brewster, you can put up the video from C-SPAN on YouTube again, just to show that they are now leaving the chambers. The Senate is leaving the chambers, and they are walking across Statuary Hall to the other side of the Capitol building to debate on the Senate side. So interesting. We're going to try and get a stream of that Senate debate. I imagine that C-SPAN will go back and forth, but they should at the very least have two feeds. And yes, I think Donald Trump is still speaking, or did he stop? He might have stopped. We had that Trump speech. We covered that for the first hour. Trump laying out the details of the fraud that we have spent the last 2 months covering. So he went through state by state by state, telling us a lot of things that we knew, but hyping up the crowd. Then they were going to walk that march down the street to the Capitol building to protest. So we can go ahead and take down C-SPAN now. They're going to talk to some expert, and we don't want to violate their copyright in this manner. So we do have a call in line, 888-441-1121. If you want to call in and let us know what you think about Mike Pence just doing what the parliamentarian told him to do and not calling an audible and not rejecting Arizona. I mean, theoretically, he could reject other states, but if he's going to allow Arizona, it's probably not going to go well. So as we've said on the podcast before, this is the third time in the history of the United States Congress that Electoral College results have been challenged. This is the first of at least three. I hope it's six, but the first of at least three challenges today. They plan to challenge Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. Still not sure whether Michigan will get challenged. Still not sure whether Nevada will get challenged. Still not sure whether the last one, Wisconsin, will be challenged. They're actually talking about just giving up on Wisconsin so they don't waste time. That's the GOP for you. So we do have the Senate is now going into session on the Senate side. Let's see. The Washington Post has it. I don't want to go the Washington Post stream. Okay, so this is PBS NewsHour. I really hate doing it, but I'll send it over to you, Mr. Producer. This is on the Senate side. Right now, it's just a holding screen, so we're not going to go to it yet. I don't know if they're they'll probably go to the Senate side. So we'll keep that. We'll keep looking at that. Again, our call-in number 888-441-1121. As we're getting ready for this all to go down, great time, I guess, to talk about what happened last night. They stole it again in Georgia. Is anyone all that surprised? I mean, when I was a kid, I would play Madden, the football game, football video game. And whenever I would play a younger family member, I would always completely whoop them because they would always play this, call the same play over and over again. They play their football team and they keep calling the same pass play or the same running play over and over and over again. And I was thinking to myself, I remember thinking to myself at the time, only a child would play a game, a football game, and call the same play over and over and over again, expecting it to work. Well, what we saw in Georgia last night was that the Republican Party of Georgia, for all intents and purposes, is a child. The Democrats ran the same exact playbook and they stole it the same exact way. It is no secret, is no surprise what happened. So I want to put up a couple images just to show you what we were dealing with yesterday in Georgia. Mr. Producer, go ahead and put up image number one. So this happened late at night. This is from Rick Rennell. In Chatham County, they just stopped counting. And it's happened in multiple areas. There's just multiple areas, multiple counties in the state where they just stop counting in the middle of the night. They stop counting. Oh, we'll take it up in the morning. Well, the reason that they do this, at least allegedly, is to figure out how many votes they need. You stop counting, wait for all the Republican counties to come in, and then you come back and you make sure that there are just enough votes for the Democrats to eke by a victory. So that was happening. They stopped voting. We also saw this, Mr. Producer, put up image two. This is a sign from the building where they were counting the votes in Fulton County. And if you can read that on the bottom, it says no pictures, no binoculars, no speaking to the employees, etc. If you violate these rules, you are subject to immediate removal from the site. Georgia law allows you to observe. Where do they get off saying you can't use binoculars? Where in the rules or in the law does it say that an election observer cannot use binoculars? That's not a real thing. That's not real at all. And it just shows you what they were afraid of. It shows you what they were afraid of last night. It was a complete sham. It's always been a sham. And the GOP didn't even fight to stop it. They didn't even fight to stop it at all. Couple more pictures I want to put up. Mr. Brewster, put up image three. This is from a reporter who was on the ground. Heather Mullins from Real America's Voice said that when she was there was not a single Republican challenger, and they were just counting and adjudicating ballots without any oversight whatsoever. Sound familiar? This was in Fulton County. Surprise, surprise, surprise. And then let's go to image four. This is the one that pissed me off so much. They did it again. It's not even, they're not even trying. They did it again. They did it again. You saw from that first one that we showed you, right? How they stopped counting at around 10 p.m. I think it was actually 11 p.m. local time, 10 p.m. because I'm in Central Time Zone. They stopped counting at 11 p.m. Look what happened in between 11:02 and 11:11. Zoop. just enough to give Ossoff and Warnock the lead. It's the same ridiculous jump in the graph that we saw in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, all these states. Same jump. They did it again. They did it again, and they didn't even pretend to hide it. So let's go ahead and we'll watch the House side. Ms. Brewster, if you have it ready, let's go ahead and put the side-by-side up. So we're going to be going to listen in on the House objections, and hopefully we can get the Senate side,
Madam Speaker,
too.
This is something that is clear that our founding fathers debated about as a fundamental decision.
So this is Steve Scalise, representative from Louisiana. I'm not just reading this. I know who he is. Make sure the volume's turned up, Mr. Producer.
The different versions they went through to ultimately come up with a process where each state has elections, each state has a process for selecting their electors and sending them to Washington. And Madam Speaker, in a number of those states, that constitutional process was not followed. And that's why we're here to object. If you look at what the requirement says, nowhere in Article 2, Section 1 does it give the Secretary of State of a state that ability. Nowhere does it give the governor that ability. Nowhere does it give a court that ability. It exclusively gives that ability to the legislatures. And in fact, in most states, that's the process that was followed. But for those states that this wasn't followed, unfortunately, this is not new. We've seen over and over again more states where the Democrat Party has gone in and selectively gone around this process. That has to end, Madam Speaker. We have to follow the constitutional process. Now, there might be reasons why some people don't like the process laid out by a legislative body. Madam Speaker, I served on one of those legislative bodies when I was in the state legislature for 12 years. I served on the House and Governmental Affairs Committee where we wrote the laws for our state's elections. And I can tell you, when we had to make changes, those were extensively negotiated. We would have people on both sides come, Republicans and Democrats, Madam Speaker, would get together to work through those changes, any minute change, to how a precinct would function, to how a change would be made in the time of an election, signature requirements, all the many things that involve a clerk carrying out the duties in each parish in our case. You would see people come and give testimony, Madam Speaker. Both sides could come. Clerks of court were there in the hearing rooms. It was an open process, by the way, not behind closed doors in a smoke-filled room where somebody might want to bully a Secretary of State to get a different version that might benefit them or their party or their candidate. That's not what our founding fathers said is the process. Maybe it's how some people wanted to carry it out, but they laid out that process. And so when we would have to make those changes, they were in public view. They were heavily debated. And then ultimately, those laws were changed in advance of the election so everybody knew what the rules were. People on both sides knew how to play the rules before the game started, not getting somewhere in the process and saying, well, you don't think it's going to benefit you, so you try to go around the Constitution. That's not how our system works. It's gotten out of hand. And so President Trump has called this out. And President Trump has stood up to it. So many of us have stood up to it. And in fact, over 100 of my colleagues, Madam Speaker, asked the Supreme Court to address this problem just a few weeks ago. And unfortunately, the court chose to punt. They didn't answer it one way or the other. They didn't want to get in the middle of this discussion. We don't have that luxury today. We have to discuss this. We have to fix this. In fact, on our first full day of this Congress, many of us brought legislation onto the House floor to start fixing the problems with our elections, to restore integrity to the election process, which has been lost by so many millions of Americans. And we had a vote. Every single Republican voted to reform the process. Every single Democrat voted against it. They don't want to fix this problem. But the Constitution is our guide. And it's time we start following the Constitution. It's time we get back to what our founding father said is the process for selecting electors. That's the legislatures. And
he should just take the mask off.
Not behind closed doors, not smoke-filled rooms, not bullying somebody that might give you a better ruling. Let's get back to rule of law and follow the Constitution, Madam Speaker. And I yield back the balance of my time.
Gentleman's time has expired.
So I believe the way they're going to do it is everyone gets 5 minutes, one side to the other side, like ping pong game. Each speaker will get 5 minutes to make their case on the House side. Still trying to find a Senate stream that we can share. But yeah, on the House side, each Republican who stands up and makes a case will get 5 minutes, and then they'll go the other side.
To strike the last word.
Without objection, the gentlewoman is recognized for
five minutes. Madam Speaker, this day marks a crossroads for American democracy. Those who object to the counting of the Electoral College votes, which reflect the votes of the American people, want to substitute their preferences for the voter's choice. That's not what our Constitution requires, and it's at odds with American Democratic Republic. If Congress selects the next president instead of American voters, we'll have no need for an electoral college. In fact, we'd have no need for presidential elections at all. We'd be moving from a government elected by the people to a government selected by those already governing. That's not America. In the United States, we abide by the choices of the people, not an elite few. The framers of our Constitution considered whether to have Congress select the president and specifically rejected it. Instead, they wrote Article II and the 12th Amendment. Article II creates the Electoral College, where each state appoints electors. Laws of all 50 states and D.C. require electors to vote for the winner of the state's popular election. Each state provides for the orderly conduct of elections, including lawful challenges, recounts, and the like. The 12th Amendment is what brings us to today. It says the electors meet in their states. That happened December 14th. The amendment says the electors shall cast their votes, sign and certify them, transmit them to a seal. That's been done. The sealed envelopes containing the signed certified ballots from each state's electors, reflecting the votes of the people, were in those mahogany boxes. The 12th Amendment directs the president, as the vice president, as the president of the Senate, to do only this. Open the sealed envelopes, and then the vote shall be counted. Simple. It doesn't say counted in a manner that some members of Congress or the vice president might prefer. No. The votes are simply to be counted as certified and transmitted by the states. During Reconstruction, after the Civil War,
so we're going to go now to the Senate side, so we don't have to listen to the Democrat. We're going to switch this over from the House. Now we're going to go to the Senate. Let's turn up that volume. Mike Pence is laying out the rules. The majority leader and the minority leader will each get to speak, and then each side will get an hour. Let's go ahead and turn up that volume, Mr. Producer, and listen to Mitch McConnell speak. See what he has to say.
Whether Congress should overrule the voters and overturn a presidential election. I've served 36 years in the Senate. This will be the most important vote I've ever cast. President Trump claims the election was stolen. The assertions range from specific local allegations to constitutional arguments, to sweeping conspiracy theories. I supported the president's right to use the legal system. Dozens of lawsuits received hearings in courtrooms all across our country. But over and over, the courts rejected these claims, including all-star judges whom the president himself has nominated. Every election, we know, features some illegality and irregularity, and of course, that's unacceptable. I support strong state-led voting reforms. Last year's bizarre pandemic procedures must not become the new norm. But my colleagues, nothing before us proves illegality anywhere near the massive scale the massive scale that would have tipped the entire election.
So Mitch is going to object
public doubt
to
alone
the objection.
He wants nothing to do with a radical break.
He's a spineless weasel.
When the doubt itself.
So instead of letting him make his case, we're going to go and listen to Jim Jordan on the House side. He just got up to the microphone. Let's listen to him.
There was something wrong with this election. During the campaign, Vice President Biden would do an event and he'd get 50 people at the event. President Trump, at just one rally, gets 50,000 people. President Trump increased his vote with African Americans, increased his vote with Hispanic Americans, won 19 of 20 bellwether counties, won Ohio by 8, Iowa by 8, and Florida by 3. Got 11 million more votes than he did in 2016, and House Republicans won 27 of 27 toss-up races. But somehow, the guy who never left his house wins the election? 80 True. Million Americans, 80 million of our fellow citizens, Republicans and Democrats, have doubts about this election. And 60 million people, 60 million Americans think it was stolen. But Democrats say, no problem, no worries, everything's fine. We asked for an investigation. We asked Chairman Nadler, Chairwoman Maloney for an investigation. They said no. Wouldn't want to investigate something that half the electorate has doubts about. It's just the presidency of the United States. Why? Why not one single investigation? Why not?
No. Go back to it. Just make it full screen.
Why? Because all the Democrats care about is making sure President Trump isn't president. For 4.5 years, that's all they've cared about. July 31st, 2016, before he was elected the first time, Jim Comey's FBI takes out the insurance policy, opens an investigation on the president based on nothing. May 17th, 2017, Bob Mueller named special counsel. 2 years, they investigate the Russia hoax, 19 lawyers,
40 agents, and $40
million of taxpayer money for nothing. December 18th, 2019, Democrat House members vote to impeach President Trump based on an anonymous whistleblower with no firsthand knowledge who was biased against the president and who worked for Joe Biden. But none of that worked. As hard as they tried, none of that worked. They threw everything they had at him. So what'd they do next? They changed the rules. They changed the election law, and they did it in an unconstitutional fashion. And that's what we're going to show over the next several hours of debate. The Constitution is clear, as Whip Scalise just said. State legislatures, and only state legislatures, set election law. In Arizona, the law says voter registration ends on October 5th. Democrats said, we don't care what the law says. They went to a court, got an Obama-appointed judge to extend it 18 days. No debate, as Steve talked about. No debate, no discussion, he just did it. Pennsylvania, same thing. Pennsylvania law says mail-in ballots have to be in by 8 p.m. Election Day. Democrat Supreme Court said, nope, we're going to extend it. Election Day doesn't end on Tuesday now. They took it to Friday. Extended the election 3 days. Not the legislature, partisan Supreme Court. Pennsylvania law says mail-in ballots require signature verification. Democrat Secretary of State said, nope, I'm going to decide by myself that it doesn't. For 2.6 million ballots. Pennsylvania law says mail-in ballots can't be processed until Election Day. Some counties said no. And you can imagine which counties they were. Democrat-run counties said no and allowed ballots to be cured and fixed before Election Day. They did an in-run around the Constitution in every state that Republicans will object to today, every single one. It was a pattern. It was their template. They did it in Arizona. They did it in Georgia. They did it in Michigan. They did it in Pennsylvania. They did it in Nevada. They did it in Wisconsin. And yet some of our members, some members say, don't worry about it. We shouldn't do anything. Just let it go. It was just 6 states who violated the Constitution. What if it's 10 states the next time? What if it's 15? What if in 2024, 2028, it's 26 states? What if it's half the states do an end run around the Constitution clearly spells out? We are the final check and balance. The authority rests with us. the United States Congress, the body closest to the American people, right where the founders wanted it. We should do our duty. We should object to and vote for this objection to the Arizona electors. Madam Chair, I yield back.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and go back to split screen, Mr. Producer. And so now the Democrats are going to get a chance to talk in the House. I prefer not to air their BS. And Mitch McConnell's still going on about fairness. Actually, you know what? Let's switch to McConnell and see if he's accidentally become a conservative in the last couple minutes.
Not only in victory, but in defeat. The framers built the Senate to stop short-term passions from boiling over and melting the foundations of our republic. So I believe protecting our constitutional order requires respecting the limits of our own power. It would be unfair and wrong to disenfranchise American voters and overrule the courts
and
the states.
Take it back. He did become a conservative. Not an accident. We thought, go back to split screen, we thought he was going to be a conservative. Ooh, Adam Schiff. What's Adam Schiff saying? Let's listen to this and see if he actually makes a logical point.
When the conduct of any state election was challenged, the courts, through judges appointed by Democrats and those appointed by Republicans, heard unsubstantiated claims of fraud, found they had no merit, and said so. But
so
most important, the American
volume down. That is a lie. So we're not going to let him lie. We've built up our channel, built up the show, built up our audience. We're not going to give Adam Schiff time to lie. The lawsuits that were filed, not a single one reached the stage where there would be a ruling on the merits. Adam Schiff just lied. He just stood on the floor of the United States House of Representatives and lied, saying that the judges and the courts looked at the merits and shut it down. That's just not true. It's not true. Every single one was shut down before a ruling on the merits could be made. Just what he just said was factually wrong. So we'll keep it up there just so we can have the side by side and wait for someone who actually knows what they're talking about to take the podium, which should be in about 4 minutes. But in the meantime, I want to talk about what's going to happen for the rest of the day. So obviously you're going to have Mitch McConnell doing everything he can to stop this. He is a spineless little turtle and he has no intention of actually doing the right thing. In his mind, actually doing the right thing means certifying Joe Biden's fraud. So that's a shame. That it's very shameful that Mitch McConnell, it would be far better for him just to sit down and shut up than to use that time to try and undermine the entire process. So for today's proceedings, Mitch McConnell is not going to be much different than Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer is talking right now. But if he makes a statement even approaching coherence, we'll make sure that we put him on as well. But I don't expect that. So we're going to keep him off the screen. So what's going to happen is they're going to go state by state by state by state by state. Hopefully all six states. It sounds like they might have gotten senators to object to Wisconsin, Michigan, and Nevada. If so, there will be six objections. Now, technically, they can object to individual electors. It looks like they're not going to do that. Looks like they feel comfortable with 6 hours of total debate. That's what they plan to do, and that's how they plan to make the case. With Mitch McConnell now saying that he's not going to vote for it, with John Thune saying he's not going to vote for it, with Mitt Romney saying he's not going to vote for it, the odds of the numbers in Congress overturning this are getting lower and lower and lower. It would require a massive exodus of Democrats fighting against their own party to block their own party's nominee from being certified. There's too many spineless Republicans. And we kind of warned that this was going to be the case. We warned that the Republicans wouldn't have a backbone unless we forced them to. And yeah, we forced a lot of Republican senators and congressmen to the table to do the right thing. But ultimately, people like Mitch, people like John Thune, people like Roy Blunt, apparently they are uninterested in actually fighting for the truth and fighting to make sure that only legal votes are counted. So we'll be switching back and forth as people who are good, strong conservatives as they come up to the mic. I have no intention of giving any wishy-washy rhino, any leftist, any airtime on our show anymore. Especially we just gave Adam Schiff, 15 seconds, and he couldn't even get through 15 seconds without lying. We do have the phone line, 888-441-1121, if you want to call in. I am ashamed of Mike Pence. I am ashamed that he is basically going to call phone it in. He is not going to actually run it. He is just the puppet. And as we said, if you watch when he actually runs the proceedings, he has the parliamentarian standing next to him, reading, whispering. You can hear it actually over the hot mic. The parliamentarian telling him what to say, and he just parrots it and repeats it. So it looks like he has no intention of actually doing his job and making sure that only legitimate votes are counted. It looks like he's just going to go through the motions and go down in history as one of the great cowards of our time. It pains me to say that, but Mike Pence had a date with destiny today, and he chose to become the coward. Instead of standing up, doing the right thing, and fighting the fraud, he chose to just roll over. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. Maybe he'll find his backbone in the coming hours as they debate other states and fight to certify other states, but I doubt it. Let's go to the House of Representatives side. We have Andy Biggs, the representative from Arizona, making the case. So, Mr. Producer, why don't we put up the Arizona side, turn up the volume, and let's listen in.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I join the objection to counting votes of electors from my home state of Arizona, as well as Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Nevada, because election integrity is the heart of our American constitutional republic. In a representative form of government, we must be able to trust that our elections accurately represent the will of the American voter. This is the appropriate forum anticipated and provided for by our founders to debate whether this election complied with the Constitution that we've all sworn to protect. Every particular of the Constitution is to be protected, including Article 2, Section 1. The debate as to the legitimacy of the 2020 presidential election has been suppressed by the left and its propagandists in the media until today. State legislatures are required to determine the manner in which electors are chosen. Arizona names its electors on the general election ballot and identifies what candidate those electors are required to vote for should that candidate obtain the majority of votes in the general election. As part of the manner for determining electors, Arizona also establishes deadlines for voter registration. The deadline has been in place for 30 years. This year, the voter registration deadline was October 5th. Early voting commenced 2 days later. 5 days before the deadline, a group filed a lawsuit demanding that Arizona election officials not enforce the deadline. The federal district court decided that since other states have a deadline later than Arizona's, and some even allow for registration when voting, that Arizona's new deadline would be a time he chose, not the legislator's timeline. The appellate court effectively overturned the lower court ruling and noted that the Arizona deadline established by the state legislature was sound and appropriate and complied with the Constitution. But the appellate court merely shortened the extension, the bypassing of the deadline, to 10 days. The appellate court, without legal justification, also decided that everyone who registered after the legal deadline, but before the deadline created by judicial fiat, could still vote. Note that the Arizona legislature was no longer in control of determining the manner of appointing presidential electors, because the court had set a new deadline, even though the appellate court found the legislature's deadline was constitutionally sound. During that window, more than 32,000 voters registered in Maricopa County alone. Here are copies of those voter registration records. In going around the deadline set by the legislature, the court ignored the Arizona legislature's obligation and right to direct the manner for choosing presidential electors as set forth in Article 2, Section 1. As a consequence of that judicial usurpation, more than 32,000 people were allowed to unlawfully cast ballots in Arizona's presidential election in 2020. The Arizona legislature seeks an independent audit of the election. The governor refuses now to call them into a special session. The Maricopa County Board of Supervisors has refused to comply with legislative subpoenas. In Arizona, the people who control the evidence related to the election have done everything possible to prevent an independent audit directed by the legislature. Arizonans have used the limited amount of records available to investigate the 2020 presidential election. Of a limited sample of 1,000 addresses of voters, they found 539 voters did not live at the addresses on the voter rolls. Here is a stack of 1,000 declarations of affidavits supporting that. I object to the counting the votes of Arizona electors because the federal courts went around a legislatively constructed mechanism for choosing Arizona's presidential electors, allowing tens of thousands of voters to unlawfully cast votes. The court usurped a key component of the Arizona legislature's manner of selecting presidential electors, thus violating Article 2, Section 1. The legislature is being obstructed in its efforts. And what little evidence we have, or little information we have, has produced this kind of evidence, which indicates a significant problem with the integrity of the presidential election. Madam Speaker, I ask that my written comments, together with the voter registration records that reflect the 32,000 registrations permitted to in contravention of state law, letters and resolutions from Arizona legislators pertaining to the count of votes from electors, along with approximately 1,000 affidavits and declarations pertaining to potential voter fraud in Arizona in the 2020 presidential election, and the statement of Congressman Randy Weber of Texas, be made a part of the record. I yield back.
Thank the gentleman. For what purpose does the gentleman from Maryland seek recognition?
All right, let's jump over to the Senate.
Opposition to the objection.
Let's go back to split screen.
The gentleman is recognized without objection for 5 minutes.
We're going to play the Senate side.
Madam Speaker, I want to thank you first and all my dear beloved colleagues for your love.
Let's turn the volume down real quick. I want to show this because this is the scene of what's happening outside of the legislature right now. Mr. Producer, put up that first video I just sent you. This is what it looks like outside of Congress. It is completely falling apart. And yeah, that's a 7-second clip. It's being looped. Let's put up the second video I just sent over. They're not going to be able to control this much longer. The fraud that is being certified in Congress right now, the crowd outside is boiling over. Mr. Producer, put up that second video I just sent you. This is insane. I mean, the cops are not, there's not enough cops there. There's not enough. I mean, yeah, it's one guy completely destroying it. Yeah, back the blue. Who's going to back the blue after today? Every one of those cops receiving unlawful, unconstitutional orders to put down this assembly. Huh. Back the blue is back more than the country. Back the blue. Thin blue line is probably what's going to suffer the most today. But it's just complete chaos. It's complete chaos outside of the Congress. Let's go back to the split screen and let's listen to Ted Cruz a little bit.
Democrats,
he is the senator who has co-sponsored this.
Joe Biden will almost certainly be certified as the next president of the United States. I want to speak to the Republicans who are considering voting against these objections. I understand your concerns, but I urge you to pause and think. What does it say to the nearly half the country that believes this election was rigged if we vote not even to consider the claims of illegality and fraud in this election? And I believe there's a better way. The leaders just spoke about setting aside the election. Let me be clear, I am not arguing for setting aside the result of this election. All of us are faced with two choices, both of which are lousy. One choice is vote against the objection. And tens of millions of Americans will see a vote against the objection as a statement that voter fraud doesn't matter, isn't real, and shouldn't be taken seriously.
Yeah, let's go back to split screen.
A great
screen
many
second.
Of us don't believe that. On the other
Mr.
hand,
Producer, that video
most
we just
if
showed
not all of us believe we should
was
not set aside
those patriots on the ground busting through four layers of security, getting to the last layer of security in between them and the Capitol building. So when we said it's getting crazy, yes, it is getting crazy. They busted through multiple, I'm seeing reporting that it's four layers of security to get to that final line. We're going to keep watching that, and we'll keep jumping in with some clips as this keeps going. Let's go back to Ted Cruz.
Five senators, five Supreme Court justices examined the evidence and rendered a judgment. And what I would urge of this body is that we do the same. That we appoint an electoral commission to conduct a 10-day emergency audit, consider the evidence, and resolve the claims. For those on the Democratic aisle who say there is no evidence, they've been rejected, then you should rest in comfort. If that's the case, an electoral commission would reject those claims. But for those who respect the voters, simply telling the voters, go jump in a lake, the fact that you have deep concerns is of no moment to us. That jeopardizes, I believe, the legitimacy of this and subsequent elections. The Constitution gives to Congress the responsibility this day to count the votes. The framers knew what they were doing when they gave responsibilities to Congress. We have a responsibility, and I would urge that we follow the precedent of 1877. The Electoral Count Act explicitly allows objections such as this one for votes that were not regularly given. And let me be clear, this objection is for the state of Arizona, but it is broader than that. It is an objection for all six of the contested states to have a credible, objective, impartial body hear the evidence and make a conclusive determination. That would benefit both sides. That would improve legitimacy of this election. And so let me urge my colleagues, all of us take our responsibility seriously. I would urge my colleagues, don't take perhaps the easy path, but instead act together, astonish the viewers, and act in a bipartisan sense to say we will have a credible and fair tribunal, consider the claims, consider the facts, consider the evidence, and make a conclusive determination whether and to what extent this election complied with the Constitution and with federal law.
So let's jump back from the split screen.
Senator from
that's
Minnesota.
Ted Cruz.
Mr. President, I first would like to say I appreciate...
No, we don't want to listen to her. Turn the volume down. Ted Cruz laying it all out. We're monitoring the situation outside the Capitol. They've started evacuating buildings around the Capitol building, telling staffers to leave. This is not going to end well. So let's go now to the House version. Let's put the House version up and let's turn the volume up. This is Lauren Boebert. She's from Colorado.
For what purpose does the gentlewoman from Colorado?
She is the one who insists on carrying a gun in the Capitol. She's my new favorite. So let's listen to her.
The gentlewoman is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And to ease everyone's nerve, I want you to all know that I am not here to challenge anyone to a duel like Alexander Hamilton or Aaron Burr. Madam Speaker, my primary objection to the counting of the electoral votes of the state of Arizona is based on the Constitution and the direction of state legislatures through state law as spelled out in the following two clauses. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 states in part, and I quote, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. And the Election Clause of the Constitution provides state legislatures with explicit authority to prescribe, and I quote, the times, places, and manners of holding elections, end quote. For more than 3 decades, Arizona law set by the state legislature has required that voter registration end no later than 29 days before an election. This is clear. It is law. Unless amended by the state legislature, this is the way it needs to be carried out. In Arizona, the deadline for voter registration for the 2020 presidential election was October 5, 2020. Using COVID as a reasoning, Democrats filed a lawsuit to extend this deadline by 18 days. And an injunction was made by an Obama-appointed judge preventing the Arizona Secretary of State from enforcing the constitutional deadline set by the state legislature. As a result of this frivolous partisan lawsuit, 10 extra days were added via judicial fiat to allow voter registration. These 10 days were added after voting had already begun. This is completely indefensible. You cannot change the rules of an election while it is underway and expect the American people to trust it. Now, in this 10-day period, at least 30,000 new voters registered to vote in Arizona. All of these votes are unconstitutional. It does not matter if they voted for President Trump or if they voted for Vice President Biden. They did not register in time for the election. The law states October 5th. Either we have laws or we do not. If we allow state election laws as set forth by the state legislature to be ignored and manipulated on the whims, partisan lawsuit, unelected bureaucrats,
Order. The House will be
it's
in order.
It's getting a little spicy.
If we allow state election laws as set forth by state legislatures to be ignored and manipulated on the whims of partisan lawsuits, unelected bureaucrats, unlawful procedures, and arbitrary rules, then our constitutional republic will cease to exist. The oath that I took this past Sunday to defend and support the Constitution makes it necessary for me to object to this travesty. Otherwise, the laws passed by the legislative branch merely become suggestions to be accepted, rejected, or manipulated by those who did not pass them. Madam Speaker, I have constituents outside this building right now. I promised my voters to be their voice. In this branch of government, which I now serve, it is my separate but equal obligation to weigh in on this election and object. Are we not a government of, by, and for the people? They know that this election is not right, and as their representative, I am sent here to represent them. I will not allow the people to be ignored. Madam Speaker, it is my duty under the U.S. Constitution to object to the counting of the electoral votes of the state of Arizona. The members who stand here today and accept the results of this concentrated, coordinated, partisan effort by Democrats, where every fraudulent vote cancels out the vote of an honest America, has sided with the extremist left. The United States Congress needs to make an informed decision, and that starts with this objection. I yield the balance of my time to the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Brian Mast.
Ooh, let's go back to the split screen. I think I have a new favorite.